Hi, this is Mary Angela Perna, and this is Mary's Place Media, formerly Lush Left Media. I have on the program today Igor Deresh. He covers politics at Salon. He has bylines in the Chicago Tribune, Baltimore Sun, and elsewhere. And he wrote a fantastic piece. I cannot wait to get into it. Thank you for coming on the show, Igor.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, I'm going to name the title of your piece that was published on the 4th of February. I have to tell you, I'm someone who is obsessed with all things Bannon, the Mercers, Cambridge Analytica, all of it, and this has it all. It's really focused on the Mercers, particularly Rebecca Mercer, and I have a specific, just remind me that I have a very specific question. So the name of the piece, and I will put this in the show notes, is how one billionaire family bankrolled election lies, white nationalism, and the Capitol riots. So it's a very long article, really worth reading, everybody. What made you decide to write this in the first place?
Well, I think there's been a lot of focus on sort of the people that fomented the violence of the Capitol riot, and I think that, I mean, I've spent obviously weeks now writing about it, although it seems like it's been years. A lot of them are directly linked to, you know, the Mercer money, either directly or, as is the case with many of their donations, indirectly. So whether it's obviously, you know, they bankrolled Trump, but they also bankrolled Josh Hawley, pumped a lot of money into helping Ted Cruz in 2016. Spent tens of thousands of dollars to back, Mo Brooks, who was one of the key voices in leading the objections to the Electoral College votes, and has also been sort of implicated, accused of helping to organize the rally that preceded the riot, with the march from the Ellipse to the Capitol. And then when you scratch the surface, even just beyond that, you know, obviously they dropped a lot of money to the RNC, which backed a lot of Trump's legal challenges. The Intercept reported just like last week that they were like the biggest funders to Kelly Ward, who ran two highly unsuccessful Republican campaigns in Arizona and then spent these last couple months sort of, ginning up these election fraud allegations. She joined the lawsuit to overturn votes in a number of states. And they were also promoting these tweets saying that you should give up your life to fight for Trump. And it goes like so much far beyond that. I mean, obviously Bannon and Breitbart, as well as some other Bannon initiatives that have for years sort of fomented the hate movement that Trump built his campaign around and then quickly transitioned to pushing his election lies after the election. There's been a couple of just peripheral groups like the Gatestone Institute, which is this like think tank run by John Bolton, that also, you know, pumped out all this anti-Islam content. And then in the weeks following the election sort of pivoted to advancing Trump's lies, as did, you know, Breitbart continued to, and many others in the conservative sphere that got backing from the Mercers.
Well, the other one was the Bannon, the Government Accountability.
Yes, the Government Accountability Institute fascinates me. It got a lot of press, a lot of even positive press from the mainstream media in 2016. They published
the Clinton cash
sort of expose, and then since then they've sort of been pushing really unfounded reports about Hunter and Joe Biden, and then also pivoted to pushing the election lie on very Trump-friendly media outlets right after the election as well.
So before we get, because this is a very, there's a lot in this piece, and we can, you know, and I really want to get into some specifics, but I have a side question. It's not really a side question, but as I was, you know, prepping for this interview, I saw that in the end of 2017 that Robert Mercer, so it's the father of the Rebecca's the daughter, as you obviously know that, he stepped down from that firm.
From Renaissance Technology. Yeah, Renaissance Technology is this sort of controversial algorithmic high frequency trading hedge fund. It had come around that time under fire for failing to pay almost $7 billion in taxes. That was also when a lot of the media scrutiny really started focusing on them. So he personally took a step back, but Rebecca Mercer, who runs the Mercer Family Foundation, has certainly continued their political exploits. And although, you know, they did pull back after 2018, there was a lot of media scrutiny around some of the hate groups and the far right politicians that they were funding. They do remain very involved in conservative politics, certainly with their $1 million donations to Republican House candidates and the Republican National Convention committee.
Well, I, number one, don't know if I'm going to believe Robert Mercer. That's first off. So this was like reported in the end of 2017. So I just happened to see it today. I'm like, and he said that he was like stepping away from Breitbart, but she clearly has been involved in all these things, you know, the daughter. And I mean,
when Robert Mercer stepped away from Breitbart, he sold his stake to Rebecca Mercer and her sisters, and Rebecca Mercer is the only one actually involved in it. So even though he stepped back, the Mercers definitely did not step back.
Now, so for people that don't quite understand, because I think that I have a question for you. Would you say that, as I read today, the firm that Robert Mercer was a part of, according to those reports, like his partners and the people that the higher ups there, they were all like Democrats and not really comfortable with his politics and et cetera, et cetera. Now, but would you say though that it doesn't seem like he was super active as one of like the Koch brothers, and we've all heard of the Koch brothers for years. Would you say that the Tea Party movement that kind of got, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so that's actually a really fascinating question. What I realized is that they really were not politically involved before 2018. I mean, there was maybe 30-something thousand dollars in donations to political organizations I want to say 2006, including a check that Rob Mercer's wife actually cut to Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign at the time.
Right.
They seem to really go far right around the time that Obama came to power. And then when the Supreme Court basically allowed unlimited dark money into elections with the Citizens United ruling, which they also pumped $4 million into the Citizens United organization, which, by the way, is run by David Bossie, the former Trump campaign manager, who then led his election challenges after this most recent raise. I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
To me, I see like a straight line, like a direct line. Now, you could go before like Pat Buchanan and all that. I've had people on the show to discuss that. But there's an obvious direct line as far as like when Bannon he always loves to bring up the Occupy, you know, when the markets crashed in 2008, and you know he's a populist, and I'm sure you've heard him say that a million times. He loves that story forever, and instead of channeling it in the right way, he channels it in his nationalist populist thing that he loves to talk about. But he loves to say like populist revolts. So I'm just curious. It just seems like the Mercers are around these like right wing, but like in that populist vein, like that Tea Party vein.
Right, absolutely. So that was the thing I was getting to that I forgot. It was basically around 2010, after the Citizens United ruling, they actually joined the Koch Brothers Network. And over a fairly short period of time, as I understand it, Rebecca Mercer was particularly frustrated with the direction that they were going. I talked to Steve Schmidt, who's the longtime Republican strategist, Project Lincoln Kill founder, who rolled in these circles back in the day. And he basically described
Sarah,
the Koch
Sarah
as these,
these
transactional billionaires who were really willing to invest in whoever in order to advance their small government sort of ideology. And
right.
Rebecca Mercer, after sort of splitting from that group, invested very heavily into far-right populists. And that goes all the way from, you know, Trump and the Bannon movement to now, you know, Josh Hawley and some of these other more fringe candidates.
Right. Now, I didn't know that until I read your piece. So, weird. There's so much to discuss. It's almost like I feel almost overwhelmed. Your piece is that good. Now,
it covers a lot, and yet
it's so little of what
they've actually done.
Now, help me out. So Cambridge Analytica, that was the first. So for people that don't know, can you explain it? Because you're going to do a much better job than I ever could.
Yeah, so the Mercers basically put up a lot of the seed funding for Cambridge Analytica, which created these data graphics or personality profiles of Facebook users, essentially by stealing user data, by violating
mm-hmm.
Facebook rules to steal Facebook data. And they later got in a bunch of trouble in the UK where they were based. And, you know, the utility of that venture is questionable. She tried to push it onto the Cruz campaign when they were still backing
them in 2016. That's where I was going, because to me, Brexit was sort of like, or other things were kind of like the lead up to Cruz. So Cruz was before Trump, right? They wanted Cruz.
Yeah, yeah. They sunk over $10 million into his PAC. Kellyanne Conway was actually a key figure in the Cruz campaign. And
okay.
they really pushed them to use this Cambridge Analytica data, and Cruz campaign people sort of demurred, and that ended, you know, I mean, his numbers weren't that good, so they cut bait with him pretty quickly as Trump was rising. And then Trump brought on folks like Brad Parscale, who really took advantage of Facebook's user targeting, user data, and really made that a focal part of their campaign. And so, you know, it's hard to say that Cambridge Analytica was not a key advantage in their attempts to use Facebook to sort of really push hard online, which is where a lot of this pro-Trump sentiment built up.
Well, as I look into this, and again, I told you I listened to Steve Bannon's show since
mm-hmm.
quarantine almost every day. He's not all his predictions. They never come true. Like Bannon's stuff never comes true. The cast of characters he brings on, they're like the Peter Navarros and the Borscht. You know, I could go on down the list. The Jason Miller, all of them. None of their predictions ever come true, ever. And I've been listening to that show straight for a year. I bring that up because to me, it seems like he only got lucky with that,
mm-hmm.
Being brought onto that campaign in August of 2016, it was just a lucky break. Like, we all have a lucky break. Like, you know, a broken clock, you know, is right, you know, twice a day kind of thing. And
right.
I don't think he's this mastermind that people tried to make him out to be, because he's always wrong. I can tell you that he is. Would you say it's a fair, you know, as far as the Cambridge Analytica, the data, you know, this precision? They said it was, what's the term as far as people that really looked at Cambridge Analytica, that it was like, I'm gonna botch this.
Infographics?
Like war grade, help me, the precision of getting data, it was like military grade.
Fairly disputed. I mean, there's two camps on this. One is obviously believes that they data mined user data and
right.
Both illegally in the UK and also in violation of Facebook rules, which gave him an unfair advantage. But the problem, like inside the Cruz campaign, when she was pushing them to use that data, was they really didn't think that it was that useful. So, from what I understand, Cambridge Analytica's data had extensive sort of user profiles, and their MO was to target people that, this is all based on this love of Mercer and Bannon for this former Jimmy Carter aide named Art Cardell, who pushed this line for years that there's all these voters that are alienated by both sides, and what you really need to unite, you know, the far right, the far left, and all these disillusioned voters, is to bring in like a populist message, and that's really what they have focused on.
Okay.
And that's really what a lot of their data targeted was, those
like
voters.
And those
now, whether it was the fact that, like, it's really always really hard to quantify how something like Cambridge Analytica,
right,
let's say Russia's interference, James Comey decision actually affected the race, but I would say it's a factor.
Right, it's a data point that, to me, is it's definitely worth looking at. So then we get to things like you have so much information here. Should we go to
on the topic of supporting populists and it all often failing, is, yeah, I mean, the Mercers and Bannon really struck gold in Trump's unique ability to sort of use his celebrity and things that no one else would say to sort of draw some of these. But,
right.
I mean, most of their forays in politics have been massive failures. Robert Mercer first started out backing this guy, Art Robinson. He's a climate science denying scientist in Oregon. And he's best known for this effort to study thousands of vials of human urine in a project to study how to expand lifespan. And he had some kind of loose connection to the family. And Mercer ended up dropping like hundreds of thousands of dollars into his campaign to challenge Peter DeFazio, who's a longtime congressman in Oregon. He's the co-founder of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and he specifically wanted to go after him because DeFazio supported regulating some of these high-frequency trades that Renaissance was doing. And that campaign was just an epic failure. DeFazio remains, obviously, the congressman in that area to this day. And then separately from that, Mercer was maybe the only funder of this campaign in New York to fight what became known as the Ground Zero Mosque, which was neither at Ground Zero or a mosque. And he sort of tied it to his support for Rick Lazio, who was the Conservative Party candidate at the time. So those races really floundered. It kind of got him some negative press. And, you know, a lot of the people that they fund now have varying success. I mean, obviously, they've gone in on a lot of the far-right politicians, whether it's, you know, Mo Brooks or Marsha Blackburn or others that sort of tacitly backed or publicly strongly backed the election lie.
Well, they certainly they've been giving money to think tanks, and some of them are the greatest hits: Citizens United, as you mentioned, the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, the Government Accountability Institute, which we just discussed. And some of these just religious freedom. So they've been doing it.
He's been involved in some other like smaller projects. There was an effort to back the death penalty in like Nebraska. There was a donation to some Christian university, some anti-abortion groups. They're really widespread. And one of the things that I mentioned in the piece is it's often hard to track exactly where their money goes, because often what will happen is they'll give a few million to a fairly reputable conservative group, and then that group will go and distribute that money to really fringe white nationalist, white supremacist organizations like VDARE or fringe political candidates.
Well, speaking of, so can we just discuss Rebecca Mercer?
Because yeah, absolutely.
To me, I mean, I can only find like two pictures of her, unless I'm not looking in the right. Is she just, there's just something very, they're obviously a very private family.
Daddy Mercer has been described by a lot of people as sort of reclusive and publicity shy. I don't think he's ever publicly spoken about his political leanings. Rebecca is also pretty media shy, but from what I understand, she's a lot more social and friendly, and people think she's quite smart and personable.
So it looks like she really has, like, she hangs out with just flat out alt-right white nationalists. So at least there's some interest there.
I don't know if she actually hangs out with them, but she definitely bankrolls them. One of the things that I remember most from the sort of 2016, 2017, when they sort of broke into news, was she was the one that hosted that Trump Heroes and Villains party where Kellyanne Conway dressed up as Superwoman or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah, so they host these fancy sort of Long Island parties. It's big among sort of cocktail conservatives that do these things. He's not as involved from what I understand, and in recent years she's definitely taken the lead.
Now, I didn't know this. Now, she's saying, so as far as Breitbart is concerned, and mm-hmm. Breitbart also, from everything that I know about Breitbart, there was an advantage where they were dominating Facebook. They were able to, you know, game the algorithms, and that message board on the comments section on Breitbart was really active. Mm-hmm. And they weren't they were like kind of the journal of the Tea Party. That's how I always knew Breitbart, that it was like where the people that were interested in the Tea Party would read that. And
right. So I don't know how big Breitbart was at the time of the Tea Party rise, because it really took a major shift. And, you know, Andrew Breitbart, who ran it for a long time,
died
with the Mercers in, I'm blanking on the date, but it was in the last decade at this event hosted by the Club for Growth, which I referred to several times because it's gotten millions from Mercer and has become Josh Hawley's biggest backer. And they pretty much agreed to invest $10 million to expand Breitbart, which at that point was, I mean, it was tepidly launched as like an alternative to HuffPost, and it was really just a series of blogs. And so they invested $10 million in Breitbart on the condition that they add Steve Bannon to the board, and then Breitbart died shortly after, and Bannon took over as the head of the news operation, and he expanded it to what it became, what he called the platform of the alt-right. She's also been labeled by Chris Ruddy, who's the guy who owns Newsmax, as the first lady of the alt-right.
Oh, interesting. So, you know, listen, I could talk to you for hours, but what is one of some of the biggest takeaways you want people to get from just what we know about them so far? What, in far as your research, what are some things that shocked even you?
I've been covering the Mercers I've been in Salon for 3 years, and I was covering them before that at other outlets as well, so nothing really shocked me. But one thing that I found interesting was actually a story that came out right after the report that I published. And in it, I mentioned that Rebecca co-founded Parler, which was this far-right social network that was used by some of the mob at the Capitol to coordinate their attack.
Right.
So she basically forced out the CEO of Parler, who was a longtime family associate. He says in recent interviews with the Wall Street Journal and some other outlets that she basically stabbed him in the back because he tried to install moderation standards at Parler, which is what they came under fire for by Amazon and Google and Apple, who all took down their apps. And she basically just rejected his plan to, you know, cut down on neo-Nazis on the platform, on extremist groups on the platform. And I think that really says a lot about what her ideology is and why she's doing a lot of this, because that was one of the things that I struggled with when I was covering this, is just why.
Can I ask you a question about Parler real quick?
Absolutely.
I remember seeing on Twitter that someone that has, I don't know, hacking skills, something that I certainly could never pretend to in a million years, figured out that now I made an account on Parler just to go spy on right wingers, like I always do.
Right.
But I would never made a comment. Are you joking? Like, no. And I used a throwaway account. So apparently, if you wanted to get quote unquote verified, you know, the equivalent of a blue, you know, having a verification mm-hmm. on Facebook or Twitter, you had to, I guess you had to give your social security number.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's true in order to go through the verify process. But just in general, she said when she launched Parler that she did it primarily for three reasons. One is a sort of libertarian free speech platform. The other is to get away from like the data mining that other social networks were doing, which is ironic because that's what Cambridge Analytica exploited.
Right.
And then she also highlighted how Parler would protect their users, except not only did they basically expose people's social security numbers, they didn't really secure any of their user data.
Nothing.
So
they secured nothing. So when Amazon Cloud Services or whatever it was kicked them off and they had literally mm-hmm. had no home, there was, I believe it was a good hacker. What do they call that?
A
white hat over in Sweden or somewhere that was, it was like a group of these people that were spending shifts of 18 hours shifts to scrape all that data. I'm sure you remember that because I remember that in real time as it was happening. And I'm like, wait, this is unbelievable. So there's got to be stuff that they're going to grab from that. And it turns out,
it was a massive hack. I mean, it was a massive number of files. But among the things that those researchers filed was, like, GPS locations from people that were using Parler that found they were all over the Capitol complex and then found a whole bunch of videos that had since been taken down. Basically showing people committing their crimes inside the Capitol and just sharing it among their Parler friends.
I pay attention to, I get notifications for a few of the, I guess it's the journalists that are covering who the latest round of arrests for January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many, these are good. These are journalists are helpful in that they'll highlight some of the, more notable things in the filings. And I can't tell you how many there'll be a Parler, part of the evidence is something from Parler, video,
absolutely.
Picture,
a lot of,
whatever.
Yeah, a lot of the evidence that's going to be used against them was posted on Parler. I will note real quick that I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago about Parler's role in it, and Parler was by far the worst of the worst as far as what people were doing and saying and coordinating and planning on there, but you can see from charging documents now is that Facebook also played just a massive, if not a much bigger part in mm-hmm. pushing all these ramblings that would have been confined to smaller groups and fringe groups to a much wider audience. And in terms
I don't know if you're familiar with it, like the Amy and Kylie Kremer, I think is their last name.
Yeah,
covered
them a lot.
Yeah, they did a Stop the Steal Facebook group, and
yep.
Bannon kept bringing them on his show. If you watch Bannon, it's like a one-stop shop of bad people. So that's how I know all these people. Anyway. So,
Amy Kramer gets featured in like legitimate news interviews all the time. It's really alarming because she's way out there in the fringe.
But how are they not? By the way, to anyone that doesn't know, and you, I'm sure you know this, Amy Kramer, whether it's true or not, she takes a ton of credit for getting Ted Cruz elected to the Senate. Is there truth to that?
I'm not familiar. I don't know.
I'm telling you, she's been in interviews and she talks and she like brags about that. But I'm a little confused as to why, because they were major organizers of the Stop the Steal or mm-hmm. rallies, like not just the one, like many for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little confused as to where we're at with some of these major, like the Allie Alexanders, those two. I mean, I could name like seven people where I'm like, okay, why am I not seeing arrests? I don't want to sound like QAnon, like on the flip side, but it's just so obvious of the people that really kind of were some of the main organizers. Like, I'm just curious, like, what's happening, but I have to trust the people that they seem to be getting closer and closer to, you know, figuring out. And hopefully we can get to the bottom of some of this. But
yeah, I do think it's possible they could face either criminal liability as the DOJ develops some of these cases. You know, there was a new video just, I think, Friday or Saturday that showed Roger Stone sort of hanging out with these Oath Keeper militia guys that were later arrested and charged with conspiracy at the Capitol. So I think some of those figures will certainly get dragged in, even if they're not charged. And I think beyond just the legal ramifications, there's also, you know, civil lawsuits. There was a lot of people, I mean, four of the members of the crowd and a police officer died, and more than 100 cops were injured, not to mention, like, countless other injuries that haven't been reported. And, you know, those people are going to sue.
I agree with you. And not only that, I mean, like, I'm seeing these straw man arguments of, so now they're starting, you know, figures are starting to come out that just even securing the Capitol, we're just talking about securing the Capitol. I can't remember the figure that came out. I think it was yesterday or today. It's like $600 million, and that's just,
yeah, I think $480 for the National Guard, and then there's a bunch of security costs because, like, they were also planning to storm state capitals all over the country ahead of Biden's inauguration, which didn't pan out, but there was a lot of money that went securing those.
Well, you know that, like, Bannon and that whole crew, they're furious with Liz Cheney. So, you know, Matt Gaetz went to Cheyenne. Is that how you pronounce it? To Wyoming.
Yep.
And that's their new stop the steal, is they're going to do like Breitbart style. They're going to primary in their mind, those are the traitors, those 10 Republicans in the House that voted for impeachment. So,
absolutely.
For some reason,
I mean, it's been reported.
Cheney's their number one. I'm sorry.
It's been reported that Trump, that's all that Trump has really obsessed about since leaving office, is Liz Cheney and all these people that he believes betrayed him.
Yes, I could see that. I could picture it. Now that I believe for sure. Well, I cannot thank you enough for writing this. Again, everyone, I'm going to put this in the show notes. The name of the article real quick is How One Billionaire Family Bankrolled Election Lies, White Nationalism, and the Capitol Riot. It's long, but in the best possible way that you don't want the article to end. It's super fascinating. It's going to make you just want to just read even more about this family and all these other, just, it's just a web of groups and just insanity. Are you going to be writing any more on this, or, you know, what are you working on?
I don't currently have plans to follow this up, but as I mentioned in the article, a lot of their donations sort of flow through this obscure web of groups. So if anybody finds, you know, something linking the Mercers to any one of these straw man donations that they often do, hit me up. I'm at iDarish@Salon on email, or you could follow me on Twitter at Igor Darish. That's DERYSH.
Well, Igor, promise me that you'll come back on. You're a great writer, and if anything, I will be forever in your debt for writing this piece. It's just, it's so important that we have to know about these bad actors. So thank you so, so very much.
Thanks so much. This was fun.
Thanks.